pleasure for me to be here. I just actually flew in this morning from Chicago. My daughter is a graduate of the University of Nebraska, and so we got together on Saturday night, and one of us really enjoyed the game. So Dr. Daly did really a tremendous job of setting up what I'm going to speak about. I'm going to talk about vaccination, but in fact, the things that he talked about in terms of biosecurity and management, and I'll talk a little bit more about management, are absolutely key whenever we're talking about a disease control program. And vaccination often gets the brunt of when things don't work right, it must be the vaccine's problem. But in fact, there's a lot of things that vaccines can't do. And I want to talk today about some of the challenges that we have with vaccination. And so, as Dr. Daly already alluded to, when it comes to diseases, it's multifactorial. You're going to actually see some of his diagrams with mine in just a second. And it, really, management, there's a lot of things that go into this. And vaccination, really, to be quite honest, is a nice safeguard for us. But I really consider it, for the most part, insurance. And that management and the other things that we can do up front are really the things that are really going to pay off in a big time. And that vaccination program is really the insurance that we get after that. One of the things you're going to see this afternoon is I use a few videos, so I just want to give credit to the people whose videos I'm going to use this afternoon, and particularly this will be a couple from this book called Immunobiology, so I just want to make sure that, and there's a few slides from a few other folks that I borrowed, and I want to give them credit. I'm going to use as my example today, actually, bovine respiratory disease. Even though this is a reproductive conference, this is a disease that we're all familiar with, and certainly a disease where it's multifactorial and we're stressed, because I really want to talk quite a bit about stress today and its effect on vaccination and what we can do about it. And so there's a number of facts up here that certainly we're all aware of in terms of respiratory disease. It's certainly the biggest challenge that we have in terms of infectious disease. In the cattle industry, I don't need to review all the facts and figures with you, but indeed, it's a big issue that we have, and my laboratory has spent really a lot of time looking at this disease. And as we know, again, when we vaccinate, we're trying to prevent a number of things. And we know, obviously, with this disease, we have the obvious losses that we have for mortality, but then there's the morbidity costs. And the same thing if we think about reproductive diseases. So there's other things that are associated that, you know, we may not see the dramatic number in terms of abortions or conception loss, but there may be a lot of other things that are going on at the same time that we need to be aware of. And our costs. And again, this is you saw this disease triangle that Dr. Daly had in his presentation. And again, it's this idea that there's an interaction that's here. Vaccines are going to be part of the solution, but the key again is to understand the environment, the host, and that interaction, and that we need to really look at all parts of that triangle. So the thing that I really want to speak about, in particular when it comes to vaccination, is stress. And so stress is really anything that reduces the immune capacity. And we're, again, when we vaccinate, what we're doing, we're asking that immune response to get turned on, to get keyed up, to give us long-term protection to that animal. And if that animal is under any kind of stress, it's really going to have a negative effect on that immune response. And again, we know that any kind of adaptation to production is stressful. So, could people say, well, what kind of things do you think are stressors? And just about everything. You'll see that in a couple lists I'm going to have here in a second. And again, we know that in more intensive operations, it even becomes a bigger issue. So if you're looking at stress, and again, if we're looking at incoming animals, so we got weaning, sales yards, commingling, transportation, dehydration, time off feed, injury, all those kind of things, all are stressors, all that have a negative effect on how the immune response is going to come together. And again, just to add on to this, to this level a little bit more, as we get into areas where we're particularly in the feed yard, density, pen number, and in any kind of operation, the handling and movements of animals will all indeed be stressors that we need to be aware of. And of course, weather, which we've seen this year, and dust. And I think that's one that we often may underestimate a little bit, is actually dust itself in terms of what it can do. And then obviously there's the last thing, and that's competition. And I can remember I went down to a big bull production facility in Texas, flew me down to Texas because they were having all this problem with BRD. And I went out, and these guys sold about 3,000 bulls a year. And I went down there, and the biggest problem that they had is they didn't have enough bunk space, okay? If you don't have enough bunk space, you're not getting enough energy, you got competition, and guess what you got? You got problems. I don't care how good the vaccination. They didn't like that as an answer, but I can just tell you that often, it's those kind of management things will get in your way before anything about there's really a vaccination problem. Okay, a little bit more about what makes this disease, BRD, such an interesting disease is this idea of interaction. And you can see across the top here we have viruses, we have bacteria, we have a number of things that are there. And a lot of these in particular, they're normal inhabitants of the respiratory tract of cattle. And some of the things that Dr. Daly talked about when he talked about lepto, in some cases BVD, some cases trich, these are normal constituents that are actually there in some of these herds. And so we have to be aware of that if there's some of these things that are actually, you know, there and on the farm. And then, you know, so by themselves, they can certainly lead, in this case, since we're talking about respiratory disease, to pneumonia. And then we add on to that. The other side, the animal side. So we look at the stressors. So if they're physical, environmental things that are going to affect, they all affect the immune system. Okay, so they make the immune system perform more poorly. And again, so if I'm vaccinating at that time, not a good time to vaccinate. Again, if that and bacteria can block that, viruses can block that. So the immune system is really at risk in these animals. And then the other thing and so there you see the viruses coming in. The other thing is, and this is something we sort of don't think much about, and that is sort of psychological. And this gets back to the fear and flight. So again, if I've got cattle of higher temperament, if I've got cattle that have more of that sort of fear and flight, they're going to have more issues. And in fact, the interesting thing is we know now that bacteria, they can pick up on that. Bacteria can pick up of their upper respiratory tract will actually change, and the more pathogenic ones will take over when you got animals under stress. They pick that up. They pick up that signal that the animal's producing, and the bacteria actually will change to do that. So again, that's why stress gives us the kind of issues that we're looking at. So again, the big thing is what happens, though, is it has a negative effect on the immune system. Now let me just talk in this slide. There's a sequence that this animal's immune system has to go through for a vaccine to work. And there's a three steps. And the first step is something we call the pro-inflammatory response. So what that means is when we give the vaccine, the animal cells get recruited, they get mobilized, the animal knows something's going on, the immune system does it, responds to that. That's called pro-inflammatory. Then the second thing that happens is their T cells get turned on. That's the part that gives us memory and it gives us antibodies and gives us what we're after with our vaccine. And then interestingly, the third thing that has to happen is, okay, we turn that immune system on. Guess what it has to do? It has to turn itself off. Okay, so it turns itself on, turns on the part that's important for our vaccine response, and then it has to turn itself off. So it's a 1-2-3 kind of a deal here. And that's what I'm showing here. So 1-2-3. There's a sequence. Guess what happens when we put those animals under stress? So instead of, so that we get this pro-inflammatory, the recruitment thing starts out, okay, but at the same time, because the animal's trying to deal with this inflammatory response, it turns the anti-inflammatory response on. That comes on at the same time. And the other thing they do is they turn off their ability to generate very good T cells. So we end up with something called immunoparalysis. The immune system doesn't know what to do. And so again, that's why trying to avoid times of stress as much as we can, we're going to be better off, because those kind of issues really causes paralysis and doesn't give us the kind of response that we really need. And one of the things that I know absolutely runs counter to what most people understand, particularly with received cattle, there's been a lot of work done with Southeast cattle that show very clearly waiting 2 weeks after you receive calves to give them modified live vaccine is the best thing to do. And I know that absolutely runs against the paradigm of what most of us think about, and a part of it gets back to how many times I can touch them or handle them. But if in the best world, if I can wait, it turns out again because I get past that stress period. I get past that time, as we're going to talk about in a second. The immune system needs energy. If I bring animals in, they're in a negative energy balance. They do not respond well to vaccines. Okay, so those are all things that we need to be aware of. Now, what I'm going to show you here, this is a little movie, and it's not with something that you normally look at because it's hard for me to get a cow onto a slide, but it's a lot easier to get a zebrafish up there. So that's what I'm going to show you here. This is a zebrafish, and what I'm going to show you here is what happens in terms of turning this immune system on. So what we're looking at here, this is a fin of a zebrafish, okay? So what they've done is they laid this zebrafish out, it's live fish, on this microscope slide, and they've taken a needle and they've made a wound in it, okay? And what we're going to watch here is we're going to watch how these cells are going to go towards that wound. Imagine the wound is our vaccination. Because again, we got to have cells get mobilized, we got to get cells to get going. And that's what you're seeing here. So you're seeing that these cells will move out of these blood vessels into the area. Imagine, again, it's our vaccine. And it's absolutely key to get that vaccine to go, that those cells have got to be able to move. And the same thing in terms of its immune response. Those cells have got to have the ability to move out, as you're seeing here. So they move out. They can become mobilized. They help get that vaccine to really get going. But again, you see what happens. Those cells are literally crawling out of those vessels. You know what happens with stress? With stress, these cells really decrease their ability to climb out of those vessels at all, and they don't migrate very well. Okay, so that's one of the things that we see the stressing. Oops. The next thing that we see, get it up here, is this is actually the activation of this is a white blood cell called a neutrophil. And imagine these are cells that are really important, particularly if we're talking about respiratory disease. That actually will, as you're going to see, actually eat bacteria. Okay, so this is a neutrophil. These are red blood cells in here. And what we're going to do is we're going to watch this neutrophil as it chases after a Staph aureus. So those of you that are familiar with in dairy, that's a big pathogen in mastitis, the Staph aureus, and certainly a big pathogen in people as well. And you'll see this cell just bird dogs after that Staph. Because remember, its job is to eliminate that Staph, okay? So you see it just kind of bird dog after it here, continue to chase it down. And finally, as you're going to see, it's going to get it kind of pushed up against the wall here, and it's going to go ahead and engulf it. And typically, if I've got dairy producers in the room, we're at this stage of the game when that Staph aureus is destroyed, there's a little applause in the room because there's one less Staph now. Okay, so anyway, all right, so... The thing, though, again, is if I have stress with those animals, that cell cannot move as fast as you just saw. Okay, its ability to move is slowed down considerably. The other interesting thing is we were looking at a young calf, we'd see about four times as many cells in there, but they would, again, be moving a little bit slower than what we just saw in this last one. So, again, the thing that we got to be aware of then is that stress has an effect on how these cells are actually able to go out there about their business. And the other thing that you'll see this last note that I made down here is that BVD is also good at this. BVD in particular has a negative effect on neutrophil function. It takes a little while to these cells to get over that. So whether we're talking about actually a field infection or modified live vaccine, they too have a negative effect on these things. So again, I believe in modified live vaccines, but again, timing to me is very critical. So one of the things, again, that we talk about with the animal and its response to immunity is the fact that the animal tells us what's going on, and particularly the naive animal. So the young animal in particular that hasn't seen a lot of vaccines before, we can expect that there should be some side effects, because that tells me that the vaccine got the immune system's attention. Because I know when I was in practice, I mean, you know, the my producers would come in, they'd say, you know, doc, I want you to give me a vaccine that's so smooth that I didn't even know they got it. Well, I would contend that if it's that smooth, nothing happened. Because if nothing happened, nothing happened, okay? So I expect that, you know, the animals are going to, you know, I may see occasional droopy ear. I may see animals drop back off feet a little bit. But you know what that tells me? It tells me that the vaccine got the immune system's response. Because think to yourself, when you get an influenza vaccine in your shoulder, how's your shoulder feel the next day? How do you know, is your appetite nearly as good as it was? So those things that tell us that the immune system is seeing what it needs to see. And that, to me, is really important. And if we don't get that response, I would contend we're going to see higher disease. Now, I'm not talking about animals that are down and out, but again, that some idea that indeed they've seen that vaccine, literally, the immune system has. Now, Dr. Daly did a nice job, you know, talking about management, but again, I think wherever possible, my whole point here with vaccination is trying to eliminate stress factors where possible, and at the critical period for disease detection is within 3 weeks following weaning, or put them on feed, shipping, those kind of issues. So again, when we have stress, when we have negative energy balance, those are all times that we need to be aware that those are not opportune times in terms of vaccination and immune responsiveness. So again, avoid commingling as much as possible. Make sure the animals have, you know, got feed and water. So if we're bringing replacements in, that we're doing all those kind of things, don't overcrowd them and control that dust and that mud. So again, environmental factors, group size, ventilation, all these things that we talked about are stressors, really important in being able to really optimize my vaccine response. Now, let me talk about a second thing, and that's diet, okay? And again, one of the things that we don't think about is that the immune system does not get a free ride. In fact, I will tell you the immune system is one of the biggest energy hogs that there is, okay? It's absolutely critical that immune system gets energy to be able to really get going. And so again, if I'm given a vaccination, I got an animal that hasn't been on feed yet, and I'm expecting that vaccine to perform well, I am in la-la land because they've got to have immune or energy to get that immune system going. So again, we got multiple energy demands on these animals, and I would contend that in general that if we over-vaccinate, because the immune system requires some energy, that there's going to be some, you know, there may be some negative effects in terms of overall growth. And again, so vaccination, you know, prior to acclimation to feed, I think you're going to see poorer responses. Okay, so again, we need to have those animals really on a positive energy route. So again, if you look at it, and I've just got a few little energy diagrams here. So again, every animal is going to have a certain maintenance requirement that it's going to need to have to keep its heart going, its lungs going, and all those kind of things going. And then the rest of that's going to go into growth and lean. But again, if we immunize those animals, they got to have some of that energy, has got to be able to go into that immune response. Again, really important that we're on a positive energy balance when we're immunizing these animals. The breeding heifer, again, of course, Sarah, we're looking at, she's got to put some energy into reproduction. Okay, so again, you know, I like to think that I'm going to try to vaccinate that animal before she's, you know, I'm really getting into my reproductive all-out, you know, synchronization programs, those things. I want to get that done earlier in that period with her. And then when I look at the pregnant animal, in general, I like the pregnant animal for one reason, and that is for two reasons. One is that from an energy standpoint, you've got a time then when that animal's actually putting some condition down. So you've got some kind of a little bit of a place to steal that from. And, of course, the other advantage that you have in the pregnant animal, obviously, is boosting colostrum. And I have quite a bit more in the proceedings about colostrum than I'm going to talk about today, but I'll just mention a few things about it as we go along. And then finally, the postpartum kind. Probably in the beef cow, this is still probably, you know, the best target that we have, certainly for reproductive diseases. That this is the time that we do it, you know, prior to putting the bull out or to our AI programs in terms of that. Because if this is the dairy cow, a little bit different deal because she's got lots of energy going into lactation. But a beef cow, the amount of energy going into lactation compared to a dairy cow is not even in the same part of the planet. So again, energy is the key here when we talk about with nutrition. Protein is also very important. You know, we often talk about the trace minerals and those kind of things, but really energy and protein are the keys. Then vitamin A, vitamin E, and then copper, zinc, and selenium are what we call the immune minerals. And then iron also is important when we talk about immune responses. Okay, so in terms of immunity then, so energy is important for our immune response. I didn't mention this idea that actually vitamin A, not a big problem in cattle that we have vitamin A deficiencies, but it can actually decrease some of our immune responses. Zinc's very important, okay? And the interesting thing about zinc is if you look at in stressed cattle, zinc takes a big hit. Zinc goes like right through the urine like you wouldn't believe. So in stressed animals, that zinc is really important in terms of making sure that we've got a good level of zinc. And then vitamin E and selenium also very important for those responses. Okay, so let's just talk a little bit more about vaccines in general. Okay, so I'm a big fan of intranasal vaccines. I like intranasal vaccines because I think they give us a mucosal immune response, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. We're kind of limited right now in terms of there's not a lot of products, so we have Enforce, we have Nasalgen, we have TSV2, but I do like these products because I really think they have a good response in terms of this idea of mucosal immunity, and that's the idea. I mean, if I'm given the vaccine, and particularly when I'm talking about bovine respiratory disease, I'm talking about a disease that affects the respiratory tract. But the other interesting thing is that even when I give a intranasal vaccine, that vaccine will also have an effect on other mucosal surfaces, which includes the reproductive tract. Okay, so even I give it to her in the nose, I will have a positive effect on the lung, I'll have a positive effect on the gastrointestinal tract, and I'll have a positive effect on the reproductive tract, even though I've given it to her as an intranasal vaccine, because they're all hooked together in something called the common mucosal system. Okay, so this is this idea of this mucosal, common mucosal system. Almost all bovine pathogens come through airways and the mucosal surface, okay? So all of these viruses, and again, this is mainly, again, talking about BRD, but again, of course, with reproductive diseases, we're talking about, lepto comes in through this route, and obviously with BVD and IBR are also reproductive diseases that come through this same route, and of course, TRIC comes in through the reproductive tract, but again, on a mucosal surface. So the thing then about mucosal immune responses then is this idea that I get an immune response and I got my antibodies and everything out there and even cells that are out there ready to greet the pathogen when it comes into that animal's body. Okay, so here you see I've got my antibody out here, I've got cells, I got everything together, and now what happens then is it stops the infection. So it never even allows them to get in to cross over. Now, I need to give systemic vaccines as well. Don't get me wrong with that, because we need that, because both IBR and BVD get to the fetus through the bloodstream. So I need to have a systemic response as well. But I do like mucosal vaccines because they help us actually give us that first line of defense. All right, so when do we begin vaccinating calves? And this is going to be my pitch on colostrum. Okay, so again, I would contend that the time that we need to begin with these calves actually begins when they're in the uterus and we vaccinate that cow. And we get high-quality colostrum. And I would contend, and you know, I like this slide a lot because, again, I can't put management into a bottle. Vaccines I can put in a bottle, but not management. And, again, so if I'm looking at having good quality colostrum, I've got to have cows that are on a good nutrition plane, too, besides giving them those vaccines. Because if I don't have that good nutrition plane in that cow, I'm not going to have good colostrum. And again, I think good colostrum is the key to having good calf health and subsequent good vaccine responses. Because we know that animals that get good quality colostrum will respond better to vaccines. Okay, they will respond better to vaccines than animals that don't. So if I look in general, I make this very clear that as a producer, make sure you talk with your veterinarian about those things that are important in your herd, okay, in terms of the things to look at. I can put a laundry list out here, but in many cases, they're going to be things that are of no significance to your herd, so I wouldn't worry about them too much. So I've got things up there predominantly that cause, in this 3-week, the 3 to 4 month time frame, that are associated with calf pneumonia, particularly BRSV. Pasteurella mannheimii would probably be the biggest ones that I would be concerned about there. And then as that animal gets older, then I'm certainly more worried, and I'm not particularly worried about BVD, certainly not in young calves, nor IBR. That's something more of a little bit older calf where I worry about those diseases. I look at my approach based on the diseases that I really have a history for in the farm, in my particular farm. And again, if I have sort of some of my general guidelines and I have some of these things are in the proceedings, in many cases, I'm not a big advocate of vaccinating calves very early. Okay, I think in general, we vaccinate too early. The one thing with internasals in particular, it's less of an issue, okay, than it is, I think, giving the modified live. And I'm not a big advocate of giving BVD very young to calves because, in general, we don't need it because it's really not a disease that I worry about in young calves. And, again, once I get to those calves to that 4-month stage of the game, then I'm looking at giving, again, trying to avoid those times of stress, so vaccinating prior to or after weaning. And, again, I try to avoid vaccine at weaning as much as possible. And working around those. But again, it got to be practical. You know, when do I have the ability to get the touches on those animals? But if I can work it out, I would try to avoid those times of stress, particularly at weaning. And the thing about this, and again, I'm a very firm advocate of the use of modified live, but I want you to realize that these viruses, even though we call them modified, have, as I told you already with BVD and IBR, have some negative effects on immunity because that's what they do. Now they've been tempered compared to what we'd see in the full blown virus, the field virus, but they're still immunosuppressive. And so if I give them at a time of stress, I might expect that I'm going to have more issues. So just be aware of that. All right, let me just make a few comments about cows, and this is certainly one that you've certainly may have heard a lot about lately. And so let me just speak to this, and that's about the use of modified live in pregnant cows. I'm not an advocate of that. We've seen issues in the diagnostic lab, and I would tell you right off the bat that most of it has to do with just not following the label. But there's also, when you talk about vaccination, in the best world, I mean, we can talk about how good vaccines are, and I can show you all the data that we've generated that shows 90% protection and all that. But in the real world, you know how high the protection really is? It's probably 70 to 80%. That's probably what it really is, okay? It's not 90%, because for most diseases, if we can get 70 to 80% protection or coverage, we're going to be in good shape in terms of being able to keep a disease under control. Most of the diseases that we're dealing with, we get that 70 to 80% coverage rate, we're going to be in good shape in terms of responsiveness. The thing is, in that pregnant cow, how do I know if that's the animal that responded or not? If she didn't respond, and I give her a modified live vaccine, I have the possibility that she's not going to see that as a vaccine, but actually as a pathogen. So this claim came about for something that we were doing in practice for a long time, and part of it has to do with what I mentioned already in terms of a stressor. We were vaccinating calves on cows that had been bred, because we wanted those calves to be able to be vaccinated at a time of low stress. And I think a great idea. And that's where this claim came from. But then, and I know this is hard to believe that the government could convolute something, but they did. And they took the data that came from that and made the companies do lots of things in pregnant animals. And the companies rightfully so said, well, you asked us to do all this stuff. Why can't we have a claim then in pregnant cows? And that's where that came from. But the key is, and I want you to make sure you understand, it's only a safety claim. And this is true of any vaccine that's given to a pregnant animal. We don't know, and I've yet to see the data that shows what's the efficacy in a pregnant cow on the next pregnancy. Okay, how many studies do we have where I vaccinated a cow in the next pregnancy? What'd that do to the PI rate? There aren't any controlled studies that I know of that have done that. It doesn't matter if we're talking about modified live or inactive. But again, the key thing here is, remember, it's a safety claim. It's not an efficacy claim. And again, the key, and this is where I would contend where we've had our biggest problem, is that it says safe to use in pregnant animals vaccinated within the last 12 months, but the problem is a lot of people have seen this as safe in pregnant animals, and again, without recent vaccination, to me, that's a big issue. And I would also say that, you know, part of the reason that I think that we don't see the issues that we do in general is that the animal doesn't know the difference between a vaccine virus and the wild type. If I've done a good job of immunizing it, and then I boost it with another modified live, guess what it does to the modified live? It kills it, okay? But then am I really boosting the animal? And that's one of the things that I don't think we really, really know. So when I talk about, you know, vaccination programs, then I look at, pre-calving. Again, I'm not a big advocate of modified live and bred animals. So I want to make sure that I'm going to, give it to them probably. And again, we don't have a lot of data in this. That's a big problem in the pregnant animal for reproductive disease, because we don't have a lot of data. But I'd probably want to give it as close to calving as I could, but not right up against it, because there's an immunosuppression that occurs right before calving. And, of course, enteric disease there, we're worried about colostrum quality at that time. And then post-calving, it's just probably, again, the best time. It is certainly the best time for BVD is to give it post. And, again, I want to give it, prior to breeding. And probably I can give it, a little further out than just 2 to 4 weeks, too. Again, there's some precautions, and in pregnant animals, I won't do anything for that PI, because after that first 40 days, as Dr. Daly did a nice job of describing BVD and PIs, that it's too late, because the opportunity for that calf to get infected has already occurred. I can't protect it anymore. And then when it comes to IBR, one of the things that we need to be aware of, and Dr. Perry and I just, and Dr. Daly just published a paper that looked at the effect of giving modified live and inactivated vaccines prior to synchronization. And not surprisingly, I mean, IBR is a modified live IBR does cause necrosis of the corpus luteum. And so we knew in naive animals that there'd be an issue, and we saw that in the study that we just published. And so very few people are going to have naive animals that they're going to have, in their heifer development program. So we do a good job with our heifer development program. This probably isn't a big issue. But again, I would contend that I wouldn't be, a protocol where you vaccinate with any vaccine within a few days of or during the synchronization protocol, I'd probably stay away from. But if you have to, my feeling would probably be more to use an inactivated vaccine. Again, this is about the paper we published looked at naive animals. So again, what's about the effect in previously vaccinated animals? There's one paper out there that showed, again, in animals previously vaccinated, and they used a synchronization protocol. It was prostaglandin and MGA in that particular study, and they showed no effect on it. That's an issue that we still need to deal with. But I could, in general, I'd like to try not to vaccinate right around the time of synchronization. All right, so just a couple things to summarize that. Then pregnant cows, we got a couple targets. And remember that pregnant cow claim is a safety claim, not an efficacy claim. And again, I would remind you that modified live can be abort-efficient and immunosuppressive, certainly under the right conditions. So I've developed what I call here these sort of the laws of what I call immunological common sense. The first is to vaccinate the dams, again, prior to calving, because, again, good quality colostrum is going to be a good start for that calf. Passive antibodies are protective. Again, try to avoid times around stress, okay? Try to avoid that as much as possible. The interval for boosting needs to be at least 21 days, and I'll talk about that in just a second, and too short can give us some problems. So let me talk about this, about boostering and then modified live versus inactivated. Last two things I want to talk about. So one of the things that we know, and again, I showed you that idea before that, there's a three steps that have to happen. So the first step is that the immune system gets turned on. Then it turns on the T cells and the B cells, and then it has to turn itself off. And it turns out, like a good heifer raiser, the immune system actually does a little bit more than that. So what it does for the first couple of weeks after you give them the vaccine is it grows a lot of cells, makes a whole bunch of cells. And then what it does, like a good heifer raiser, it goes back and it culls them. It takes another 4 or 5 days for it to do that, so only the best are there. That takes about 17 to 21 days. So that really says that we need to have our interval, if we're really going to have a booster vaccination, needs to be at least 21 days, or 17 to 21 days. And I would contend in most cases, 30 to 60 days with most of the vaccines that we've got you're going to be in good shape. And even a little bit longer. I'll show you a study in just a second that looked at that. When we do it at shorter intervals, I would contend what we're doing is the animal didn't respond in the first place. Okay, they didn't take. The vaccine didn't take. So when I do it at shorter intervals, so again, what I'm saying here is I start out with 100% of my animals being susceptible. I give them the first vaccine, 70% respond. Right? So I give them the second dose now because I want to catch those other ones. I'm not really going to boost the first one. I'm going to catch the second one. Okay, so that's what I do here. And that's why I'd contend, you know, given a couple doses of modified live, and I might spread it out a little bit more than that, is necessary to probably get most of those animals to respond. Now, this is what I was alluding to. Here's a study where calves were either vaccinated at weaning time and then 3 weeks later, or, 3 weeks before weaning and at weaning, or at branding time, and then at weaning time. So there's a 120-day interval and a 25-day interval. So there's 100 days difference. No difference at all in terms of how the vaccine performed in terms of anything you looked at immunologically, but more important, no difference in terms of feedlot performance or carcass quality. These animals did just as good waiting a lot longer to give that boost. All right, so if I look at timing, then I want to give, again, I'm looking for heifer development, particularly 2 to 3 doses. By the time they're 8 to 10 months, because I want to get that into them before I'm really in that active reproductive cycle, inactivated, the same number of doses, and then you can give a combination of it. And let me speak to that right now. I'm absolutely of the belief with the vaccines that we have out there now, and I would look at any company that's out there that's got an inactivated vaccine and tell you they have much better adjuvants than they ever had. And the idea that you can use them together absolutely, to me, makes sense. Okay, absolutely makes sense to me in terms of being able to give modified live along with an activator or either sequence. Personally, I would rather give modified live first. But in fact, these things in combination, and then there's plenty of evidence out there that shows how they work together. So the old dogma is if you only use modified live, you got to use modified live, or inactivate, only use inactivated, to me, is something that we can move away from. All right, so just let me summarize then. So again, you've already talked about the importance of colostral antibodies, the idea of avoiding shipping as much as possible. And like I said, I think in general we vaccinate calves too much and too soon. I, again, would stay away from BVD in young calves. I just don't think it's necessary that we give it to them. And again, if we do a better job with our colostrum management, well, there's less need to vaccinate early for diseases. I do like intranasal vaccines. And again, depends on that if you have the problem. If you have a BRSV problem, a summer pneumonia problem in calves, I'd be looking at that because that would make sense. And again, that interval needs to be a little bit longer, I think, than if you think you're giving it 14 days, you're getting in a booster, you're certainly not. And then I didn't talk about this, but we know, again, in stress cattle, that often giving a two doses too close together can actually cause us some problems. And with that, I'm done.